Welcome to the Longest Stride Podcast. Each week, we bring you engaging conversations with the global running community. We interview community builders and leaders and the incredible runners who inspire us all. We're by runners for runners. And now, here's your hosts, Jonathan Greenwald and Andre Morgan.
Welcome to the Longest Stride. What would you do if you suffered 15 years of debilitating pain in both feet and doctors presented you with the choice of amputating them to alleviate the years of physical, mental, and emotional struggle? For many, this is a hypothetical question, but for today's guest, it's a story. His approach to life and the advocacy work he's doing for the limb loss community is truly inspiring, and we could spend the next hour reading off his list of accomplishments. But you didn't tune in to listen to us, so please welcome Aristotle Domingo to the podcast.
Thank you, everybody. Great Welcome. To be here.
Yeah, it's a long time coming, eh?
Absolutely.
Yeah, and I think we might have seen each other on MGT and different spaces doing different things. And then for us, for a running podcast, a lot of questions we're going to allude to is all about just running history. Without further ado, you know, my first question to you, how active were you when you were growing up?
Sure. Yeah, absolutely. I've always been in an active sort of lifestyle as a kid growing up. Being, I don't know if I'm stereotyping here, but being Filipino, I played basketball, of course. It's, you know, for the love of the game, right? And so, yeah, so tried many sports along the way, played basketball, played tennis. And so I've always been in that active sort of zone of running. I was actually tapped to run sort of short distances in high school because I was quite the speedy runner at the time. But I never saw it as something that I wanted to do. I never wanted to do races or anything like that. And it was just something that I liked doing. And then 2001 hit was when I got sick and diagnosed. And that's when I had started trouble with my feet and my legs. And I had stopped running completely. And I never looked at it again as a something that I could do for 15 years to your introduction there, Jonathan. And so it's just something that was behind me and I've forgotten all about it. But yeah, I grew up in a very active home. All my brothers and my sister played sports, but I was the only one who's kind of taken it to the next level, if you will, now that in my adult age.
So if you listen to this podcast, we always start with that question to get a sense of what it's like growing up and being active. And we usually focus on running, but it could be any sport. And the reason why that question was so important for you, Aristotle, is you're really active now and it helps us paint the picture of your story. And it would be really interesting if you weren't growing up, but then now you are after all you've been through.
Yeah, I mean, you know, not to jump ahead maybe, or maybe I am now at this point, it's probably a big opportunity to bring it in, is I think I stopped being active, actually, to be honest, when you hit college. You hit the books and you kind of think about just what am I going to do after all this, right? So, and at the time, I was pursuing more of what to do with paycheck to paycheck kind of thing, you know, after I graduated from school. So you go to school like you would and kind of put the active lifestyle or sports style behind me. And I've never really seen myself as an athlete. And so that's why I say, although I was active earlier on as a child, trying all different things as you would as a child or your parent would to try to get you into any sports, really, I'd stopped doing that in my college years. And then when I got sick in 2001, it had completely stopped, of course, because that's when I diagnosed with my disability and I became disabled. And running or even being active at that point wasn't really in the cards for me. So I was wearing two AFOs or leg braces to be able to stand up. And so if you can imagine walking and at that point, really painful too. So walking wasn't even in my cards for me to do. And so again, all that whole active lifestyle is kind of gone at that point. And then living in for 15 years, even probably longer than 15 years, I would say 15, 16 years, it was just about being on the couch and going to work and going through about your day and not really being anything more than that. My whole active lifestyle is gone. No sports. I didn't play any sports. I gained a lot of weight. Depression has set in, obviously, when you're in that stage of your life where you're not doing a lot and you're just living off of couch all day and work. It's not a very fulfilling life.
So you publicly share on your website that in 2001, your mom found you unconscious on the floor, and that event led to living with physical, mental, and emotional pain for the next 15 years. What was that event, and could you share kind of what led to that?
Yeah, I was a regular kid. I was in my mid-20s, and it was my last day of college. And I went home, and I got home, and I wasn't feeling well at school. And I got home, and I said to my mom, look, I have an audition the next day as an actor. I said, I have an audition. Can you wake me up at 9 o'clock in the morning? Because I want to get ready for my audition and go. And she said, okay. I said, I'm not feeling well, so I'm just going to go rest now. And of course, this is a secondhand story that I'm told. So what had happened is my mom had tried to wake me up that morning as promised. And I was told that I followed her down the hallway, but I collapsed in our hallway en route to the bathroom. And so they called 911 and they brought me to hospital. And of course, being a college kid, you know, the usual questions, you know, was he out partying the night before? Was he doing any drugs? You know, was he traveling recently? Like, what could this kid be going? Like, there's no way a kid like that faints and falls walking to the bathroom. And so I woke up 3 months after that. So I went into coma immediately after that fall.
Wow.
Yeah. So I had got into a coma. I'd taken it to emerge, and then I went into a coma. And 3 months later is when I woke up. And I woke up to my body being wrapped in bandages, because the reason that I lost use of my limbs was because it's a condition, it's called sepsis, and it's a condition that destroys your system. So slowly it started killing my kidneys, my lungs, my heart, and then the only thing that's left over was my brain. And so in order for me to survive the night, they didn't actually think I was going to survive the night. It was just a story of, I think you have to say goodbye now and pull the plug. He's not going to make it through the night. His whole body has given up at this point. And so my family was given a choice, and they said, you know, he's kind of the fighter, and let's see him fight. And I guess I did, because I'm here. So this whole sepsis kind of takes over your body and destroys its path along the way. And in destroying that path was the use of my legs, because of the damage that it's caused on my blood system. I had developed foot drop for being in the hospital for so long. I was in a hospital for almost 2 years, in and out of surgery, fixing everything along the way that it had destroyed. And so during that whole time, you lose the use of your legs. They become lethargic. Muscles, obviously, I've also had a lot of muscle damage because of the sepsis. And so, yeah, both my hands, my legs, and my feet were all damaged from sepsis. But we didn't opt out for amputation then, which is a lot of times now they opt for amputation. In order to save your life and to get the blood flow flowing in your body again, they amputate so that the blood flow is only to short part of your body, which is your torso, which is your main, you know, your main support. For me, what they did instead was they tried to save my limbs, all my limbs, and kept me on life support and antibiotics going and everything kind of going. And so for about 2 years, I was just never left the hospital, in and out of surgery, from one OR to recovery to another OR to another recovery. For 2 years. So I was just like literally getting healthy while in hospital, recovering, and then onto another surgery. And so after I left, I was finally released from hospital and saying, you know, you're kind of in good health now. You can move on and live the rest of your life. For that time, because of how damaging sepsis can be, I was just going through over and over again infections over and over again. Because not that sepsis, it doesn't go away. It does go away is what I'm saying. However, the damages that it has caused in your system keeps recurring in other places in your body, right? And so for me, it kept, if you will, air quotes, attacking my legs or attacking my limbs, in that I will develop sores, or I'll develop, because of the leg braces I'm wearing, I'll develop sores on my feet or sores on my legs, and they'll take months and months to heal. So my body's acting as if it's got diabetes also. So I'll get these tunnel wounds. And of course, once you get those, like I said, you kind of don't want to do anything because you're in a lot of pain, right? So you'll take a lot of medication to help with that pain. And then they'll put me on antibiotics because I've been on so much antibiotics that my body doesn't take tablet antibiotics anymore. So I have to take IV antibiotics. So what does that mean? That means I have to walk around with an IV on my arm and a backpack where the IV is. It's that kind of life for a while. And then even though I had gone on and moved on and gotten a career, went back to school, finished my degree and got a job and started traveling for my job, it was still constant pain, constant surgeries, reconstructive surgeries, constant infections on my body all over the place. You know, so I would go away and come back and I'd say to my doctor, look, I developed this while I was away. You know, I remember coming home from a trip out of the United States. I came back in a wheelchair because I had an infection while I was away, a bout with infection while I was away, where I couldn't even put a shoe on. And so I just bought crutches at CVS and decided to crutch through the airport. And when I got to the airport, I went directly to Emerge. And I was like, there's something else wrong because I've got a fever. Because, you know, after a while, you start picking up on cues that you are not going to be okay. So, you know, I've got a fever going. I'm feeling sick. And I just said, you know, I got to a hospital. And so when I went to hospital, right away, my doctor's like, surgery right now. Booked an OR, went into OR, and just had surgery. Coming home like that from the airport. And so my 15 years was just that. It was constant repeat of surgery, pain, antibiotics, pain. So if you imagine, your body is just going through that over and over again without rest, right? And so you'd be beaten down, you know? It comes to a point where you don't even want to get out of the house. So your friends would call and like, you want to go out? And you're like, not really. Like, I'm tired, man. Like, you know, I don't want to do this, right? Or I'm out with my friends and they'd be like, and I'd say, you know what? We got to sit down because I kind of can't go on anymore. I can't walk anymore, right? And so then you start looking at yourself and you start kind of hiding and you kind of start thinking, well, I don't want to be the burden now. So then you start isolating yourself and you start going on this downward spiral of, is it even worth it to have been saved that way? You know? And so, but you know, you manage to get up and you still kind of do your thing and you hope that something better will turn up, you know? And then, so when I was faced with another infection in 2016, I said, I think I'm done. Like, I don't want this anymore. But instead of choosing the I don't want anymore the other way, it's like, I think I want something else. Like, I think I want to know what else is out there for me to do. And I think so that's been the drive for me to continue where I am today.
Yeah. And there is a few layers there, because not that you didn't want to do sports recreationally. There's the gap off just going to school or when you're in college. But now you have this life-altering thing that happened to you, and then now you have to overcome the mental depression, plus even getting out there. And there's so much able-bodied individual that can't even get over the mental part. So I think your leap is, and I know your leap is so much more harder than the average person. So right off the bat, kudos from me and my co-host, I'm sure. Just the idea of getting through just the minute things, but these big obstacles to even get where you are today. So to even going through, you know, the 15-year period where you mentioned of just trying to figure it out, even that's a still expedited process because you could have still counted yourself out. So there's a question in this and the fact that the mental part of it. Tell me, what was your cheer squad? What was that thing that got you not cut it up and go straight to running, but kind of like what you look forward to on a daily basis?
2016 was a turning point for me, right? I just had come back from living abroad as an expat, and I came back to Canada, and I had issues while I was abroad and not being able to speak to doctors while I was abroad because of the language difference. I waited until I'd come back, and I said to my doctor, look, I've had more issues with my legs. I've had about dozens of surgeries at this point. For every time that I needed, that they need to correct something with my legs, because either I'm in a lot of pain or I can't walk or something was bothering me or a lot of infection that happens with my situation because of what I had gone through through surgeries and everything else, I was getting a lot of bone infection or what they call osteomyelitis. So after returning from abroad, like I said, in 2016, I'd gone to my doctor and I said, listen, I don't think I can do this anymore. Every time I get an infection, it's 10 days in hospital in an IV because normal antibiotics doesn't work for me anymore. And then after all of that, even after all the antibiotics is done, I go into pain medications to just manage the pain every day. If you can imagine being on a lot of pain medication, that just gets you foggy all day. That just gets you like lightheaded and a headache. Is it a headache or is it a side effect of the drug I'm taking to manage my pain? And so when I came to him, I said, what else can we do? He said, well, there's really not much more we can do. We can just have another surgery again, or we can have another rounds of antibiotics and see if it goes away. And so I made a judgment for my life at that point. It's like, what else could there be? Like, you know, what else is on the other side of this? I've already been living 15 years in this pain. How do I want to live the rest of my life? If I was given the second chance back 15 years ago, what else can I do now? Like, what else is out there? And so I was willing to try anything. And so I said, you know what? I think I want the leg gone. And this time it was my left. And so he said, are you sure? He's like, you want to have an amputation. You can't go back after you do this. I said, I think I'm choosing what else is on the other side of this. Whatever it may be, it can't be worse than what I already have gone through. It's just in that mind of what else is out there, really? And so he said, well, you know, I want you to speak to another doctor for a second opinion. He offered it himself and talk to the doctor and see what he says. And so I spoke to another doctor and he said, you know, if you're looking for better quality of life, just to be more mobile, this is the only way to do this, is to go above where the infection is and hopefully it will resolve it. And so we did. So January 11, 2017, I went ahead and had my left baloney amputation. And so to your point about kind of flipping your mind into going back into an active lifestyle, it wasn't something about I woke up and I was like, yes, I can go on and have an active lifestyle anymore. It wasn't that at all. It was, and I often talk about this, when I woke up looking at my leg and it's gone, it was more a sigh of relief for some reason, because I knew that that pain was gone, right? Like, I knew the ball and chain that was keeping me down all these years was gone. And so it was more of a flip of attitude in saying, what else can I do now? It's that change. And every day that I was in hospital and every day I was in recovery, it wasn't a goal to run. It wasn't a goal to be active anymore. It was just a goal to be able to stand up without pain, to be able to walk without pain. And I always joke about this because I said, and my physiotherapist asked me this, as they do when you're in recovery, they said, what do you want to do? What's your goal? What can you work on as your goal? And I said, oh, you know, I just want to be able to walk my dog for 2 blocks without crying in pain. Because my life has really become that. I can even walk my dog, right? It's like, dog, go for a walk and come back because I can't walk you. And so my goal throughout my whole recovery and my rehab was that I would walk for 2 blocks without crying. And so we worked on that, you know, 5 weeks in physio and a lot of times in sitting in hospital alone, you know, you start wandering, your mind starts wandering and your mind starts going, what else do I do? Like, I live day to day in for 15 years, not knowing what my day is. Let's take today as if it's a brand new day every day. And then one day I was just like, you know, I think I want to run. Like, I think I just, you know, and people ask me, it's like, oh, did you want to run because you're now an amputee and you think you can run now and you know, you want to prove people wrong by being able to run as an amputee. And it wasn't that. It was something that I wanted to do for me. I just wanted to get it one more time and just say, if I can just do that, I'm good. Like, I think I'm good. And I really only just signed up for one run, like, you know, one race. I said, I just want to get that in and just say, I've done it. It's good. I'm good now, right? And you guys will know. So anyway, and I signed up while I was still in hospital in bed recovering. And I made it as a goal to run on this one particular race. I wasn't thinking that I was accomplishing something good or something amazing. It was just, again, something to do for myself. So I didn't tell any of my physiotherapists, I didn't tell my doctor that I was going for a run until I got discharged at hospital. And I said, just so you know, I signed up for a 5K race in May. And they're like, in May? Remember, I had my surgery January. I got discharged at the beginning of March. So that means we have all of April, March and April, to prepare for a May 5th run or May 10th run. And they're like, you are crazy. There is no way you can run in May. It's not safe. You're going to hurt yourself because you're not fully healed yet. And you're on a temporary socket and you don't even have a running blade. This is just a regular athletic foot that you're wearing. And so it's like, it doesn't matter. It didn't matter to me how long it took for me to run. It didn't matter if I jogged, run, walk. All it was for me was to do that one race and be able to finish at the end of it, regardless of how long that would take me. And like I said, as you guys know, as runners, when you finish that race, you know, when you get to that end and you cross the finish line, you're like, wow, I can't believe I just did that. And now I want to do it again. And so, and that's when they say the bug bites you and you just kind of start doing it. And I just started, let me see what I can do next month. And I just started signing up for races after that. And then after that race, then the athlete kind of came back and said, ah, now you got to improve your gaits, your running, your pace, your speed, your heart. All of this starts coming into play now. And the athlete part is reborn and said, now I got to focus on how to run better, how to run safely. And then I start investigating on a best socket that I could wear, best foot I can wear for running. And just that investigation part and that research part was also part of the whole thing of being able to run. And so that's kind of how I started running again and just fell in love with the whole sport all over again.
Yeah. And I think the fact that you remain positive and going through all that and still had the fortitude to like, I'm making a decision that will change my life again. But you've gone through it for so long that you saw there's like an end goal. Like, as you said, when it did happen and you went through the surgery to amputate, it's like, oh yeah, now I can live my life. It was like, it's so many layers because you've suffered for so long, so many different phases going through this because you didn't even know you had sepsis. But each of those times you could have counted yourself out.
Absolutely.
And you didn't. You didn't count yourself out. As you said, you didn't want to be a burden on your friends. Even the fact that you even went out with friends. Like, So the mental health part is another layer. And then that's where I want to like dive into a bit. So to me, mental health is very interesting because you can't know something's wrong mentally because your own brain is like, yo, it's okay. So where was that crux of something that kind of like, oh, I need to be thinking this way or maintain your thinking. Maybe you didn't have to go through the too much of a depressive end, but that spark for you. When did that kind of work?
You know what? It's a very interesting one. And hopefully I can articulate myself in how I experienced that. So culturally, I would say, and I hate to generalize, that in my culture, in the Filipino culture, you don't talk about mental health. You don't suffer such a thing. You know, it's not in vocabulary. So whatever it is you're feeling, get over it, right? It's never, and it's unfortunate, but that's just the reality of what I've experienced, of my experience. And so I didn't identify I was going through a mental health issue. It was just something I experienced. I never had a word for it, right? But I think what I did instead is I distracted myself. And that's probably it's either a crux or it's a detriment, right? Because when you distract yourself, that means you're ignoring, you know, the signs, and you're ignoring what could truly happen, right? So for me, it was I distracted myself with school, I distracted myself with work, and hope that it was going to go away, but it wasn't going away, right? It wasn't, no matter how I distracted myself, it wasn't going away. And so when I had my amputation, the question they asked was, how are you smiling and positive? I've always been a positive guy, but I never really got or understood why. I think it was just the way I dealt with it, with things, was to maybe even in hindsight, maybe hide behind that curtain of being happy. But until I had my amputation and truly reflect back on what I had gone through, then you start realizing, and I think that kind of comes as being an athlete, is you kind of look at it and reflect on it and go, wow, I actually did okay with managing my mental health, right? And then it kind of gives you that bit of confidence, right? And so when they started asking me, they're like, how are you so happy? You just lost a limb. But I said, but if you look at my past, I just spent 15 years of not being happy, not being even happy with myself. I thought I was happy with myself, but I was carrying on a facade of being happy about myself because culturally, I didn't know what that term was. And also as a man, you don't know what the term was. You're not allowed to feel that way as a man. And so when we break that stigma of like, it's okay to feel that way, it's cliche to say it's okay to feel not feel okay. It's easier said than done, especially for a man. And for me, especially being an Asian man or a Filipino, because it was never in our vocabulary to have that word to say, you're not experiencing that. Just get over it. Right. And so when I was asked, they're like, why are you so happy about your amputation when you've just lost a limb? And I'm like, because what else is there? Like, if you knew what 15 years was, I have no other thing to be sad about.
Wow. When you were in a coma and they gave your mom the choice and she said, let's see him fight, she knew the outcome would be different because you are a fighter and you fought for 15 years. We mentioned earlier how difficult those years were for you mentally, physically, emotionally, and you never gave up. And I've been saying this a lot lately, But I'm so glad we recorded video now because your smile is so infectious. And you really are a walking miracle, my friend. And it's fascinating to listen to your story, knowing you came out on the other side. You now have a new lease on life and another opportunity to be active again. So what's that experience like?
Sure. Yeah. So like I said, you know, and I use running as a metaphor now, you know, that first run, you're like, I just want to finish this. I just want to finish this. Right. And I think I can reflect back on my life and see that as a 3K mark is my amputation. Right. You know, when you're battling through that and you're like, oh my gosh, it's like the third K, or, you know, it's like, oh, there's my wall and I can't do this. Like, why am I doing this? What's this for? You know, and then you see like the fourth K at this point and you're like, great, I'm only 1 kilometer away. I'm good. I can do this. Yeah. And then you run faster to finish the thing. So for me, you know, like I said, after crossing that, it was like, wow, what an accomplishment and what a great way to mark that moment when you said, I'm going to, you know, I did it for myself. I finally did it. And then like I was saying, I kind of caught the bug and I just started running. And running for an amputee is very different than an able body just picking up his shoes and running, right? Ours is a little bit more. There's a lot of physics involved. There's a lot of engineering involved. There's a lot of physiatry involved. That's engineering of the body that's involved. So not only do we have to have the right equipment to run, we also have to have the right mechanics to run with as far as and how we're concerned with our body and how our body reacts to each step. So once I discovered that I can run on that first Good Life run, in May, and Sunnybrook runs with this story as, you know, running 5 months after my amputation, you know, and I kind of run with that story now. I went and started researching running blades, you know, because that's what the Olympians wore. That's what runners wear, you know, and I still had my right leg at the time. And so I started researching running blades. I started going to running clinics with Nike. So Nike offers a running clinic for amputees. You work with the American coaches in running to, you know, to make sure that you're running safely and you're using your body mechanics to run. And so I got my first blade for my left, and I was still running with a brace on the other foot, which is as an ideal because it's just a leg brace, you know, like as if you'd broken your foot and you're wearing a leg brace. So imagine me running with a prosthetic leg on one and a brace on the other on a foot that doesn't move up and down. It's just a steady, it's just a locked ankle.
Oh, wow.
So try running on that for 2 years, right? So I was running on that and you know, I had my, I didn't have a full on blade then. What I had was a dynamic prosthetic leg and a running socket. So my physiatrist, which is the doctor of, what's it called? Sort of like your anatomy engineering, physiatry, physical medicine, and I, and my my leg guy or my prosthetist then worked together to get a running socket for me that is comfortable for running. Because if you guys think about it, if you can imagine it, it's just like running with a tub of ice cream, like just a plastic tub at the end of your foot and trying to run with that. And your knee is hitting the walls on each side and your limb is hitting on all each side. And it's this hard plastic, it's this hard carbon fiber that pushes you up and down like this every time you hit the wall, right? Or you hit the floor, you hit the ground running. And so I was running with that and for 2 years. And then on exactly to the day of January 10th, almost today, January 10th, 2019, I lost my right leg. I'd elected to have my right leg amputated. So my legs were actually amputated in two separate times. First was my left in 2017, and then my second one was in 2019. And it was funny because I was complaining about my right leg and, you know, as a runner, you guys know, you know, you have shin splints, you have, you know, shin issues and it hurts, your knees hurt, you know, so I was just complaining. I just thought, hey, it's just because I'm running a lot now. At that point, I was running pretty much every day, either on the treadmill or on the road, because, you know, you start trying to figure out how do I run better for the next race? How do I get my pacing right? You know, like I said, all this, you know, athletic stuff comes back into your mind. And so you start conditioning. And so I just thought maybe I'm just doing this a lot. I'm, you know, I'm hurting myself. And of course, again, you know, the blisters are still coming back on my not only on my amputated leg, but also on my sound leg, if you will, or the leg that's still in a brace. And so my, funny enough, my orthopedic surgeon is also a runner. So he said, let's have an x-ray to just make sure that, you know, you're okay, right? So he looks at it and he's like, have you broken your leg while you're running? And I said, what do you mean? He's like, I'm just curious if you had like felt like you've broken it or it was in pain for a long time, but you continued running anyway. And I said, well, it always hurts. Like my shin always hurts. And so he said, I think you'd broken it or you'd fractured it and not realized that you have. And now it's healed, bent, and you've developed an infection in the bone. So I can't get any break, right? And so he goes, what do you want to do now? And I said, you know what? Take it off. I don't want this anymore either. Because if I'm going to be a runner, I want to be running comfortably. I want to improve my pace. And at this point, I'm like, the pace that I'm running at, the reason I'm slow is because of this other leg that's not able to run because it's on a fixated ankle. And I'm comfortable running on my amputated leg, which is interesting because people are like, what do you mean? But I'm more comfortable on my amputated leg running than it is on my sound leg, if you will. And so I said, take it off. Like, I don't want it. He said, you know what? For your activity and what you do, best quality of life, it is probably better for you to have this other leg amputated. And so I did. So he goes, when do you want to have it done? And I said, if you can schedule it to the day, he said, I'll try. And we couldn't. I mean, it was a day later or a day earlier. And so I had my second amputation in 2019. And immediately after that, I went back to my prosthetist and I went back to my physiatrist and I said, look, I want to run. And so right away, we started working on running blades, you know, getting a pair of running blades together and getting the right running socket. And so, and it takes a long time for those things to happen because there's so many things that we have to dial in to run comfortably on running blades. But unfortunately, I didn't run 5 months after my amputation this time around. It took 6 months for me to run my first race since becoming a double amputee, just for the simple fact that, like I said, it takes a lot of time and a lot of configuration to make sure that when I'm running on these running blades, that my socket feels comfortable, I feel comfortable, and we won't cause damage when I run. Because as an amputee runner, we can cause a lot of damage. Hips, knees, blisters alone. Once we get a blister, we are down for days, if not weeks. You know, it's not the same as an able body getting a blister and you guys put a Band-Aid over it and you can run again. It's not the same for us. For us, it can get more damaging tissue-wise when we get a blister. And so, and we can't wear our prosthetics while it's healing. So you can't run. You can't run. You can't walk. So as soon as, you know, you develop an issue, you're kind of down. And so it's starting all over again when you can't put your legs back on.
And in the decision, there is no, you want it to be, as you said, there's a lot of physics involved, but no, there's also just that balance. If you were in a position, no, to like, okay, I don't want the able-bodied one to keep you back, but also you were treating the able-bodied one. And that's like bringing you back to the old days when you had to even nurse, you have to be nursing yourself. And no, even then, you had to then go to physio and then get back into aligning your body to get used to just adopting to both legs just being an actual blade.
Yeah, so that's a lot more work even to just stand up on two prosthetic legs. So that's why it took a little longer, not wow. just for the physics of creating a new prosthetic fit or socket or leg. It's also about the whole body, right? Even to your point, like I got to engage my core even more. I have to balance myself properly now. I can't lean on one leg and hopefully that will allow me to stand up. Now it's balancing and constantly balancing. Now I can stand up without even thinking about it, right? Now I can stand up and I move around a little because I know I'm adjusting my balance every second of every minute I'm standing. But back then I had to be aware of my whole body at the same time, right? And then walking on prosthetic legs, if there's a change on the ground and a change on the ground could throw you off, it would throw you off balance and you'd fall. So now imagine running on running blades when those things are not forgiving at all.
A shift,
even a pebble will throw you off on those blades, right? So now we're dealing with not only my balance, but the reaction of those blades, right? Because so there's physics involved now with your knees coming down, your blade hitting the ground, the energy you're storing on that blade, and how much energy is that going to push off, and how you're going to catch that energy so that you can make the next step. Now this is running through your mind as you're running, and that's something that you had to learn to make you know, almost be like a second nature to you. So I can just run with my music on and not have to think about step, take off, step, take off, step, take off, right? But in the beginning, you have to worry about all those things, because if you misstep, you will land flat on your face.
It's, as you said, there's like a recoil from a spring. So there's something mechanical there that's foreign to your body that could spring load and then even make it worse. But you then had to take, realign your body to do certain things. You know, I can imagine your center of gravity might have changed, or they're not the same height. So it just, oh man, I can't even think of just going running downhill, because then do you lean forward? Do you lean back? It's such a, those are the things that I wouldn't have thought of right off the bat. We knew it's hard, but the minute things that you had to go through to even like, yeah, I'm doing this.
Well, if you guys are running downhill and you can't control yourself, imagine us on controlling the energy of a return of a coil, a recoil, and then trying to not fall on your face as you go downhill. So there's a lot of physics that goes on in your body to just manage that.
Yeah, because you can't feel it. You can't feel it.
Yeah, my friend Jackie's an amputee. I believe she had a leg amputated about 18 years ago or so. I knew her originally from Instagram, but had the opportunity to run with her in Kansas City in 2019. And I learned a lot about limb loss and running with a blade and treads. She is a remarkable woman and athlete. And I believe she's the first amputee runner to run 100 miles on a treadmill. And she runs crazy distances. She's really inspiring, not only because she runs way further than I ever will or ever want to, but her approach on life is really extraordinary. And it's fascinating how far the technology and innovation has come for limb loss athletes and how it's enabling athletes like yourself and Jackie to do or to continue to do amazing things.
I think it's just that, you know, realizing for yourself what else is out there? You know, I often joke about a second lease or third lease on life, and people talk about chapters in their lives, right? We're all faced with something that we didn't expect, or the things that we deal with, and they're all different levels of them, how hard it is and how difficult it is for someone. And I'm not here to invalidate, however, someone's feeling about what they went through in their lives, just because my story is a bit extreme on that end. Everybody has their demons that they need to fight, but it's how we look at it, right? And how we overcome that, and our attitude and behavior towards overcoming those barriers and those challenges, that I think makes us, you know, better for ourselves and better to those around us at the same time, right? I'm not a hero, you know. I just have a story. So does everyone else, you know. And whatever that may be, whether it's moving to this country from another country, that's a challenge in of itself, right? Because now you're assimilating to a new culture, and English may not be your first language, but those are still challenges and barriers that you can overcome, right? Because now you're communicating with people. Right. And so and that's a valid story as well. And that's an amazing story, too. So it's your attitude and your behavior towards how to be a better, hopefully, person, developing that sense of belonging and that sense of adventure and that sense of, you know, challenge for yourself and say, I want to see what's next, and just kind of champion, you know, what amazing things we can do and celebrate those accomplishments.
Yeah, because, you know, I won't pretend to be as motivated as you. And I think that goes to show how you didn't want to make yourself a martyr or someone just because my story is so graphic or one up someone else about it. You were just speaking your truth and what you've gone through without adding anything extra to it. And something I thought of earlier, didn't bring it up, but I can imagine you had... And then you still do have such a wholesome family to even have that, the stuff that brought you up and how you think and maybe you're spiritual, but just those things that bind, that makes who you are. And then now that makes you a public speaker. You're an advocate. You're someone that is able to come on this podcast and share your story and still speak positive to someone else's story, regardless if it has to do with you or not. And that's just like its own thing again. So I keep saying the different layers that's coming up, and I really appreciate you sharing that, where no one has to feel like because what they're going through is less than yours, so we're competing. You know, it's still a trauma. I have a question regarding your choice of the way you approach athletics and sports. As you said you wanted to run, which is totally cool, but now you know of the competition itself, you could have done the wheelchair, and you could have taken that as an approach. And maybe there was no decision there because you wanted to be upright, but that's the same sport as well. Within running, they do that. Was there a decision there on what you wanted to approach?
No, you know what's interesting is that I think it's the adventurer in me, right? The adventurous person in me. I didn't think of myself as a person in a wheelchair. If that makes sense.
Do it like a Blade Runner.
Yeah, one of the things I was told back when I was first at my bout with sepsis in 2001 is I was never going to walk again. So I was in a wheelchair. So I got a wheelchair. I went to school for 2 years in a wheelchair because I was never going to walk again, right? So I've accepted that kind of thing. But then it's like, no, I don't want to be in a wheelchair. I'm not blaming people who are in a wheelchair, right? But it did come across to me when I had my amputation that I was going to be in a wheelchair. The whole goal when I had my amputation was to be upright and walking, was to be active, was to live my life, whatever this next chapter is, that I was going to make the best of it, right? And so that's how I always looked at that. So, you know, we talk about, you know, me running 5 months after my amputation. I actually walked out of hospital. I have a brand new wheelchair, but 5 weeks in recovery, I walked out of there even without a cane. So that in and of itself was just like, I just didn't want to be in a wheelchair. Like, it wasn't a thing for me to do. But to your point about the sports, you know, I could have done wheelchair racing. Absolutely. And don't get me wrong, I actually tried. I actually tried a lot of sports. You know, I tried wheelchair racing. I tried wheelchair basketball. I still played wheelchair basketball every now and then. You know, there's all those sports. And those sports are always going to be available to me. I have a sports wheelchair. And so when I bought my wheelchair, I also meant to buy a sports wheelchair because I didn't want the grandma wheelchair.
Yeah, I get it. Yeah,
it's, you know, it's always about being active in performance in sports, right? And so my sports is an active wheelchair, is a sports wheelchair that I can take to the court, play basketball in. I could use it on a track and race with it. I also have access to an actual racing Olympic chair through Parasport Ontario that I, you know, those three wheels ones that the Paralympians use. I have access to that chair as well. And I've tried them all, right? But running was still something that, and running is become, or has become, I should say, more of meditation for me, if that makes sense.
Oh, that makes total sense.
I used to do running as something that, I want to do this. I want to be awesome at it, you know. But now running to me is just, I have two answers for that. One is a joke answer, which is, well, I like eating and I like drinking beer. And it's the easiest way to stay in shape. You know, if you have a kind of diet of eating a lot, enjoying food and beer, right?
Yeah.
And two, it also keeps me just healthy, meaning that when I'm running, I know I'm getting my cardio workout, which is important for me to keep my weight because of an amputee. I need to keep my weight down because an adjustment on my weight means needing a new pair of legs, and that's costly, right? Also keeping my heart rate up because if for amputees, we spend more energy walking than an able-bodied person, right? Running for me, for the most part now, is also, like I said, a way of meditating. So it's a way for me to zone out. I got my music on and I run. And all it is for me is time to just be like problem solving myself, right? A lot of times I'm running and I don't even know how far I've gotten really, like on my daily runs. And I just kind of go, huh. And I've like worked out a lot of things in my head, either things that I needed, you know, to reconcile of how hard my day was at work, or just how my day went, you know, emotionally or mentally. It's just at the end of the day, and it's just like, I'm running now and I got my music. I'm running to the beat. You check every now and then, you're like, okay, my pace is still good. I'm good. And it's like, oh, wow, look, I've clocked in 5K. Maybe I should turn back now, kind of thing. You know what I mean? It's just that time of just for yourself, just to find inner peace. And that's what I'm finding with running now. So when I run either on my treadmill or outside, it's just for me to like just be with myself, like a way to look back at the day and kind of go, yeah, that was a horrible day, but now I'm fine. You know, I got my work out of it too, so it's all good.
And then that part is so similar to other runners. You know, you talk about conditioning and just keeping yourself fit, or you know, not putting on weight. That smidget is so similar to other runners and new runners and intermediate runners. And you speak in a sense of seeing yourself as a project. As you said, you work the problem, just fix that part of it and then get it going again. So it wasn't about just like, oh, I want to be able to walk, but no, I want to run. So like, how do you bring the performance in it? So you were researching wheelchairs and actual sport blades and not just like, oh, just a blade, you know? So there is the performance part of itself where you're almost like adding stickers to everything you're doing and getting that alter ego out. And that's impressive. I think ultimately the things that you've shared there just now, we, as you said, it's an outlet for you when you're running. We've all experienced that. You're like, oh, you kind of feel the same thing. I was like, yeah, we all do, right? So yeah. That's the only part of it, your story so far that we can relate to, right? So there is also your bit on public speaking. Mm-hmm. You said on your website and also just that marketing piece is that, so make your own choice to be a better version of yourself. If you could unpack that. We read it. We know what it means. But then sort of like you've said it earlier, something alluded similar to that. But if you could just kind of like, you know, preach to us about that.
Yeah. So, I mean, you know, just to be a better version of yourself, I think to me, it's just, again, it's that just that whole thing of, so I talk about, you know, different chapters in your life and new leases on life. And we all talk about that. And like I said, it's kind of cliche to hear that all the time. But you really have to ask yourself, you know, and it takes a lot out of a person to ask themselves, what do I do with this second chance? What do I do with this third chance? Right? So being better of yourself is I could have gone one of two ways. One is I could have been very bitter, been very miserable for myself. Then being miserable to myself means also being very bitter and miserable to everyone else around me. And is that productive? Right? And so is that really what you want to do as a second version of yourself or as the next chapter in your life? And you don't, you know, and it takes a lot out of a person to have that aha moment and going, I don't want to be that. Like, why would I want to be bitter for the second chance that I've been given? You know, waking up from a coma, it's like, well, you know, I mean, it didn't happen overnight that when I woke up that day, oh, I'm going to be a better one this time around. It didn't. You go through the motions of grieving that whatever it is that we lost, right? When I dealt with that bout in my life, I was in my mid-20s. When you're thinking about a career, when you're working on your life as what am I going to be when I grow up moments, right? That's when, you know, you look at yourself and you go, oh, I got to look good. I got to have the nice hair. I got to have the good hairstyle. I got to have the nice clothes. And that's been pulled from all under you. And then you're in a wheelchair. So, of course, there's going to be those moments where it's like, why me? Like, why? Like, you know, why this? Right? And then that whole questioning and that whole, you know, negative toxic feelings that you're creating for yourself also affects those around you because misery loves company, right? And so you make sure everything else around you is miserable too. And I don't know what it was for me, but there was a point where it's like, do I really want to do that? Do I really want to be that? Right? And so, again, it wasn't like an overnight moment, but I started working on it and just thought, that's not the way I want to live the rest of my life. I don't. And so, you know, you just look forward and go, okay, this is how I make myself happy. And I think once, and I was talking to a friend about this the other day, it's so interesting that when I opened myself up to what it is that I'm, you know, what else is out there for me and open up myself to being who I am and just being free as to who I am and letting people know who I am. My world became an oyster and all these other blessings kind of came on and just said, here you go. You know, I think it's just that welcoming things in your life to say, yeah, world, I'm ready for you. You know, instead of putting up a wall and saying, I don't want this.
I love all these positive affirmations and just listening to you speak and your approach on life. It all makes you the perfect advocate and ambassador for the limb loss community. You are a force and there's no stopping you. So it is remarkable how you're sharing these experiences with the world. And last month was Limb Loss Awareness Month. You've done so much in this space. Did you always see yourself operating in this space in this capacity?
That had a very interesting start. I didn't mean to do that. I didn't mean to create that space. It's about being selfish, to be honest. And I'll explain what I mean by that. So when I was going through my recovery in hospital, and you know, like I said, there's a lot of moments where you're alone, you know, in bed in hospital, and you can't help but kind of scroll through the internet. And because of this need and wanting to do something, and we were just talking about it, about let me do something with my life after this, but personally about what could I do for me, what I started having a struggle with was finding support for someone like me. So I got discharged from hospital and I was going home and then going back to outpatient rehab, because you do rehab even after you've been released for about another 5 or 6 weeks. And I noticed something with myself, that I only felt normal when I'm in rehab. When I'm outside in my own home, in my own community, what I was finding was everyone was staring at me. I mean, how hard is it to miss like a 6-foot guy with a man bun at the time, you know, wearing shorts and prosthetic legs and then walking a tiny dog? So it's like the weirdest thing to look at. And so people look at me either from that or just because I have a prosthetic leg. And so I felt like the whole world was looking at me funny, and I couldn't reconcile that in my head as to why. And so when I say I was only feeling normal when I was in hospital was because everyone around me also had an amputation, also had different disabilities. And so I thought for myself going, well, I don't want people to experience that for themselves. I don't want them to experience what I'm experiencing. That's not right. Like, if you want to move on with your life, and I talk about moving on with your life and seeing examples of other people thriving in this community, what I'm feeling, other people must be feeling, and I can't let other people do that. Like, I can't let other people feel that way. And so I found a community in the United States, and when I went to that conference, believe it or not, there's a limb conference, a limb loss conference in the United States, or an amputee conference in the United States. Being around 1,500 people in one hotel in a conference with everyone having different levels of amputation kind of gives you a sense of home, a sense of belonging, a sense of psychological safety, a sense of physical safety, and you're with your community. And so I wanted to create that when I came back to Canada. I was like, I wanted to create that space so that people coming out of the hospital, going into this community, or people who'd be out in the community feeling also that they're alone in their journey, shouldn't have to feel that way. They should have a place to belong. And that's when I created the Amputee Coalition of Toronto, because I just want people to see that there's others like me out there. It's not just in hospital settings do I see somebody with a limb difference or who's an amputee. I also wanted people to know that in the community that we are just regular people too. We just happen to be wearing prosthetics. So don't be afraid of going to the movies. Don't be afraid of going to the theater. Don't be afraid of going to eat with your friends in a restaurant. Don't be ashamed of your body, because we deal enough with enough body shame. And believe me, I have dealt with body shame for a very long time. And so for me to showcase my legs by wearing shorts 24/7 is not only saying to the world, hey, look, I exist too. And I exist in this social space. And I contribute to the world just as much as anyone can, right? So I show my metal, as we say, I show my metal with pride. But I also want people who don't see, able-bodied who see, or people with different abilities who see me going, look at that guy just being a guy, just being walking his dog, just riding his bike, just going to groceries, just going to church, just eating at a restaurant. And the other side of that is I want people with who's gone through their limb loss journey or is going through their limb loss journey to also see that and say, look, I can go back to the exact same things I was doing before. I may be doing them differently, and I may be adapting to them, which is the word that we use, but I can still do them. I'm just doing them differently now. That's all. And I just wanted to show people that all it is just you're doing them differently. You can do everything that you were doing before. Because a lot of times when people say, that must be the end of it because I've lost my leg. Well, that's all. That's it. I'm done. It's not. It's not. And so if I could show that, and if I can make them think for a second, or if I can change someone's mind to say, you know what, seeing Aristotle doing groceries, or seeing, you know, Aristotle doing sports or playing golf or running, maybe I can do that. And so what the group does is, and what I do is I invite people to, hey, let's go to the movies. Let's try some sports. Let's try golfing. Let's try, you know, and then when I see them thrive is then I've done my job. You know, last year I brought a guy who said he's never going to golf again. I said, let's go to a driving range and let's just golf. Let's see. Right. And now he plays golf every other day. Right. So the same thing. It's like, you know, oh, I want to run like you. And so I get a message the other day from another NPC that I mentored 2 years ago. She's like, I'm finally getting my running blade 2 days from now. And she's like, you've been a really good help because I watch you run. And I thought, hey, you know, I can do that too. And so, and if I can show them that, then I think I've done my job. And again, it's that part of what do you do on your second chapter? Do you want to be bitter? Or do you want to open up this world where you're actually giving back to people and you're helping other people realize their potential? I didn't mean to go out making people realize their potential. I'm just doing, and this is why I say about being selfish. I wanted to do this for me because I didn't want to feel alone, but I also didn't want others to feel alone. And so if it grew into something like this, then even better.
That was great.
Yeah, it's almost like some of the recreational bits you were doing is also for yourself to try it, but then you brought people along. And as Absolutely. You said, it's you brought them along and put them in spaces that they may not have seen themselves like that anymore. And we speak about a lot of that in a different light. And it's like you're normalizing, okay, yeah, I'm an amputee. So it doesn't seem shocking or maybe shocking is not the right word, distracted by someone. It's like, oh, you're not able to. But if it's normal that you see someone that does that in that space, then, oh, it's just like a wheelchair ramp. You know, it's such a, like, oh, it's just part of what's there. You know, when you press a button to actually open the door, it doesn't seem weird because those are a part of buildings now as a standard issued thing. So there are other bits and components that may need to be improvised in order to, like, oh, yeah, that's what that's used for. You know, going to the washroom or, as you said, going to the theater, there is a section, you know. So it's not that you, it was totally selfish, but you didn't want anyone else to go through what you went.
Yeah,
that's really what it is.
And I talk about that in, you know, inclusion in media, for example, you know, and again, you know, before all this happened to me, I was gung ho about being an actor. I'm auditioning. I was taking acting lessons. I was dancing. I was taking singing lessons, you know, and then again, you know, when that happened to me in 2001, all of that was pulled away and saying, you can't do any of that anymore. Right. And then I become an amputee and I go back to, you know, opening up your world to what else is available for you to be adventurous. And I talk about this in my inclusion talks that I do now is seeing somebody like me on mass media, seeing somebody with a limb difference or who's a differently abled on our regular TV, on commercials, in movies, right? In a play. And if we could do those, and if you could see us, that means that you could see us as normal, where it's normalizing that we are contributing members of society. And we have equal say and equal opportunities, just like everyone else does. And if I can do that with everything that I do, then I've done my job. I've done my purpose.
And then you're probably do it in the sense of, you don't want to see yourself as an actor, but also be used as a prop. The script doesn't have to be written where it's like you're this way because you're an amputee. You know, it could have been almost ignored yeah. to the fact that you're just an actor.
Well, yeah, no. Well, right. So right now there's two challenges on that. One is there's no stories written about us. So that's a challenge. Right. But if I get opportunities where it's written for me, then great. You know, but to your point, I'd rather play somebody as an amputee to showcase that what we can do. I trained in this stuff too, right? But I can do this, right? I get cast in commercials and in shows where I don't play an amputee. So I know I'm secure and confident enough in my talent and what I have in my skills that I can do those things without being an amputee. But if you write to me in a show, or if you write, you know, an amputee in the show or a person with different ability in a show, then even better. So we need to get Hollywood into that portion of writing so that we can include other people. So my pioneering, if you want to call it that, or I'm not really the first pioneer or the first actor to do that. There's been many before me. But if we start showing ourselves now and normalizing that in mass media, then perhaps writers will start writing about us and writing us into their stories. But for now, it's an uphill battle to say, hey, include us in your storytelling. Include us in your stories. Right? And then cast us who are in these stories instead of casting an able-bodied and blue screening themselves, like, you know, Lieutenant Dan that everyone refers to, right?
Yeah. And I think it's so rightful because it could have been, you know, an office scene because you work for a company.
Yeah.
So you could be in a role like that where it doesn't necessarily about your able. Let's just say mm-hmm. you're able off the bat, but you're in a role and you're speaking, you're doing the things that any other person would do. So it may not be that you're a main character in the story because it has to go to that part of it where you're a prop. But as you said, why don't you just write me in, put me in the role without raising any other flags and be distracted by me, because no, it's normal. Just like how it's not just like, but there's this part of it too where if you don't see certain people or people like or ethnic people that are superheroes, you don't think they will ever be a superhero.
Correct.
So, you know, from different background, different creeds, and they're put in position, scaling off on a New York Empire State Building as well too. It'd be normal for, you know, a Black Panther, you know, that type of idea. It's not the same, I'm not comparing, but just the idea of being able to be the true representation of who people are out there.
Yep,
and
absolutely.
Then maybe you want to go see the movie because you saw one of your co-star that is from the community.
Yeah, of course. Absolutely.
Okay, let's talk about awards. Last year, you won the Parasport 2020 Ambassador of the Year Award. What was that experience like? And maybe tell us about your role as an ambassador for Parasport.
Wow. I wasn't expecting it at all. Like I said, you know, I just kind of do these things. Like I take on people to show them what sports they can do and what's available to them now because they have a different ability. And so I happen to have been working with Parasport Ontario almost immediately. Like on my second year of amputation is when again, it's all this discovery and that research. Like, what can I do? Like, what sports can I get into, right? And so I was linked up with Parasport Ontario, and I just loved their work and what they're doing for the differently abled community in that finding, you know, sports for everybody, really. Hashtag everybody. And so working with them and seeing the work that they do, it kind of just allowed me to kind of also be an ambassador in a way that I can, if I found myself researching and finding them, maybe I can take that step further in finding people and saying, hey, do you want to try out the sport? Because I know a way for you to try that. And so that's how it kind of started. And then I started demoing other sports. I'm a multi-sports athlete. So I play sitting volleyball. I used to wheelchair race. I play wheelchair basketball as well. And now I'm a pair thrower, right? So I throw seated. So I'm in a chair and I throw shot put, javelin, and discus. And so that's my actual sport that I, you know, that I compete in on a more national level, provincial and national levels. So I'm still in athletics, but in field that way, you know. And so when just going to schools and showing different kids, even again, part of inclusion is showing kids that there's all these other sports and there's kids that may be in wheelchairs that could play the sports and you could play with them this way. When we're showing them sitting volleyball, you don't have to be a person with a disability to play sitting volleyball, but you can invite somebody who has a different ability to play sitting volleyball. So it's all that inclusion and creating that community, right? And so I was just doing that work for Parasport Ontario without thinking really of anything that I would be awarded with anything. It was just something that I wanted to bring people, again, that whole notion of showing people what you can do despite your limitation of what you perceive as your limitation. You know, you can continue doing sports, you can continue doing active things in your life. And so when I received that and when I was awarded that last year, it was just really great. You know, it kind of shocked me. It was a surprise, but it was also, you know, validating that people are seeing what I'm doing. Not that that's what you do things for, but it's a good gesture to say, hey, you know, you're doing something for the community and you're helping out. And it's great to be, as they say, it's great to be nominated, but even better to win an award. If that makes sense. But yeah.
No, it makes sense, because as you said, you weren't looking for something like that, but it almost validate that there's something happening. If there's an award for it, there must be some kind of synergy coming from different part of it, because if, you know, the actual amputee coalition didn't exist, then there wouldn't be an award in a space. Do you know what I mean? So the fact that there is an organization that looks out for the different space of it, and you alluded to winning an award, it's like, it's great. So pat on the back, take everything when it comes to, and it's fitting, because us just having a conversation, Jonathan and I, we're just like, what's going on? You know what I mean?
Well, it's just motivating too, right? Like, it just motivated me to do more work.
Exactly, what else
can I do now? You know, it's always that question of what else can I do to make things better for people, to make things more accessible for people.
Absolutely. And you're doing so. You're doing so, very much so.
Leave room on the mantle for the Emmy or the Oscar when that comes out. So
yes. No, for real, you're an actor, so work it out.
About that one, but okay.
Let's talk about another way you're giving back and connecting to the Limbless community podcast. You're on one. You have one. Your guests are ranging from, I guess, Limbless athletes to doctors and specialists in therapy and prosthesis. And it's a great resource for the Limbless community. We're glad you're doing it. What's the experience been like connecting with, I guess, doctors and other Limbless athletes and specialists?
You know what it is? It's also, again, it sounds like, you know, I'm really selfish. It was a selfish task. I wanted to do it because I wanted to learn more. I think it's all about in this whole sharing space, right? And I think that's what's been great about podcasts and reaching out on social media. So I was, you know, I started out podcast on the notion that, again, it's that what else can I bring to the community that I haven't done yet? And if I could reach a wider audience and sharing the knowledge I've learned throughout my journey in the 4 years that I've been an amputee, especially to those. So one of the bigger gaps in our community, in the limb loss community, is reaching patients or reaching folks that are not in the city. As soon as you leave the Toronto space, the city of Toronto, you have amputees who will never see another amputee, who will never even see another doctor other than their surgeon, who will be isolated in the community that they're in because they're locked in their own home, especially with COVID, but they're also may not have the right equipment or the right prosthetics to actually live an active life. And so for me, if I could reach out to those without being next to them in a social setting or in a peer support group setting, then the podcast is a way for me to do that, right? And so the podcast allows me to, or has allowed me so far, to reach that community, to reach the far corners of Canada, if you will, to speak to amputees and say, these are the things that you should be asking. These are the things that's available, right? So when I bring specialists and researchers and doctors on the phone with me or on the podcast with me, it's because oftentimes we are afraid, and able-bodied or not, we are in a culture where doctor is up on a totem pole, if you will, and culturally, a patient is at the bottom, and we hardly ever advocate for ourselves and ask the right questions about our own health and our own care. And so what I'm aiming for the podcast is to have this whole idea or this sort of, you know, giving knowledge to say, maybe a spark will come, you know, will start in your head and say, Maybe I should ask my doctor about that, because I heard it here, and I heard people experience this. And maybe I should advocate for myself more, because now if I ask questions, I may actually be able to help myself, right? And so that's what the whole aim of the podcast. In my experiences, people had been coming back and saying, you know, it's really great. I didn't know about my care when I talked to doctors or researchers, or when I talked to other athletes, amputee athletes, or people who thrive in the community. Like, what a great inspiration to hear somebody, a woman who is sailing, for example, who's an amputee, a double amputee who fell from a result of a sky jumping and now being a member of the Canadian snowboarding team. You know, hearing of kids who had surgery when they were little or born without a limb, now playing in our Canadian team, representing Canada in the Olympics. And to hear their stories, because their stories are not often all that told. You hear about Andrew DeGasse of the Olympics and the runners and the other athletes that are Nikes and are Adidas-sponsored athletes, but you hardly ever hear of the Paralympians and all those other athletes like myself who are trying to make it out there, trying to tell our stories. So I'm just giving them that space to share that so everybody else gets to hear about their stories. Because there's so many other stories out there that is not being told.
Yeah, and then I think the podcast is definitely the way to go, because it catalogs that entire library. And what you mentioned about the doctor and questioning and asking certain questions, you've done that early, because the fact that you made the decision is like, hey, what kind of life could I live if I made this decision? You're right about the totem pole top-down situation where, oh, whatever my doctor says. But yes, but also maybe I was even thinking about it, like, what can I do for myself because I'm going through this? And then a doctor is human as well, so they will have an emotional, or they may not even have a connection with you, because I get to see you once every few weeks or something like that. So they're head down scribbling away because they got to go see the other patient. You know, they could be the different kind of personal emotion in your life decision. And you took it upon yourself to make your own life decision when you decided to go ahead with both surgeries. So I that's where that all is connecting now. And you're providing that other end of media spectrum to these individuals is like the best and the right outlet to do it with, because it catalogs the entire thing. And if someone caught on later on from a corner of Canada, they could then listen to this entire thing when they discover it, right?
No, absolutely.
And just so to be clear, it's Amputeo Podcast. And that's how you pronounce it without any acronym. Yeah, it's Amputeo Podcast. And again, if we just really just go straight to your website, and we'll put that in the show notes, just show your entire story there and also any additional links. You've been probably inspired by other individuals from the community. Do you know of anyone that have just taken on sports or planning to, or in that space that you'd recommend to come on the podcast?
No, absolutely. I think who I would like for you guys to reach to next would probably be Richard Whitehead. He is a double amputee runner and the fastest double amputee runner on record. I'm pretty sure he is going to be at the Tokyo Olympics this year.
Wow.
And so I think he's, you know, I've looked up to Richard. Richard and I talk every now and then. And he's been one of sort of my, you know, my go-to guide that I look up to. And, you know, I'm never going to run as fast as Richard, but certainly a goal to look at and say, you know, Richard is Richard. And I think he's a great example of also resilience and doing something big, you know, in the community. So I would definitely, you know, recommend Richard for you guys to interview next.
Thank you so much for joining us, Aristotle. This has really been a great conversation, and we're really grateful for the opportunity to learn your journey and the great work you're doing with and for the limb loss community. We realize we do need to speak with more people in this community, and we do thank you for paving the way for these important and rewarding conversations. But most of all, thank you for sharing your remarkable story with us. Your approach to life is truly inspiring, my friend. Thank you for the recommendation as well, and we'll try to get Richard on here. Hopefully he'll join us. And again, thank you so much, and it's been great getting to know you.
Thank you for having me. It's been a pleasure.
And with that being said, this is the Longest Shot Podcast.
Peace.